the story of Adolf Simon Oakes, who was born March 12, 1858, in Cincinnati, Ohio. At 13, having achieved a common school education in Knoxville, Tennessee, he became a grocer's clerk in Providence, Rhode Island. At 14, his family returned to Knoxville, and he became a druggist's apprentice. Then he learned the printing trade, through the strenuous, strength-taxing path of printer's devil. Preparing himself continuously by attendance at night schools, at 19, he was editor-in-chief of the Chattanooga Dispatch. One evening in the year 1877, as the run of the current edition was nearing completion,
once more, Mr. Oakes.
Oh, let me see a copy. Yes, this looks good. Send him out.
All right. Playing chess with yourself again, huh?
Yes.
That's one thing I ain't never been able to understand, Mr. Oakes. You playing chess like this by yourself all the time.
Well, I'll tell you, Navi, it helps me to think.
To think? What good is that going to do you in this one horse burg?
Well, I'm not quite sure. But there are other burgs in the country, you know.
But when you get stuck in a town like this, you're stuck for life.
And Chattanooga's liable to grow a little too, Nobby.
What if it does? Playing chess like that ain't going to get you no place.
Well, I'll tell you, Nobby. As I sit here and move these pawns and kings and queens and bishops around this board, I like to think of them as human beings. As qualities and traits of human character, as opportunities. Now, this little pawn here thinks he's bottled up, but all he needs is an opening, like this, and he moves ahead.
Well, sounds kind of silly, but go ahead.
Now, if I move this king, I can get this man through here. Yes.
Who is that man?
I wonder who that man is. Maybe it's me.
Oh, hello, Adolf. Want to see me?
Oh, come in, George. Sit down.
Yeah, thanks.
George? Despite the fact that you're my brother, I like you. And I'm going to help you by letting you help me.
Well, that's great, Adolf.
What do you mean?
George,
I've just bought this paper. Chattanooga Times.
You have?
Mm-hmm. Well, how?
Oh, I've saved some money. In this country, the problem isn't making money, it's keeping it. As you know, George, the only high school and university I've ever had was as a printer's devil.
Yes, I know.
I think you've got the right stuff in you. So I'm going to give you that same chance. You want it?
Well, of course I want it.
All right, you start tomorrow morning. Report at 7 o'clock to Nobby in the back shop. He'll probably start you out by cleaning the hell box.
Oh, I don't care.
But if you stay with me, we'll go a long ways, George. Together. Will you stick? No matter how tough the going seems at times.
Why, sure.
Now, here's an English grammar, George. Start studying it. I'll see you in the morning.
Oh, all right. And say thanks for the chance.
Oh, just one thing more before you go.
Yes?
A newspaper, George, makes a profit because advertisers pay money for its wide space. They pay that money because the newspaper has circulation. A newspaper gets circulation because it gives its readers the history of each day without fear of consequences, or favoring of special theories, or promoting special interests. It's a tough job, George, but we can do it, can't we?
Sure we can, Adolf.
Well, the first thing you've got to learn is to be a practical, intelligent printer. The rest will come later. Now, run along home, George, and start in on that grammar.
As the years passed along, Adolf Simon Oakes grew, carrying his brother George Washington Oakes with him, realizing a profit on the Chattanooga Daily Times each year. His record was unbroken, even during the panic of 1893. In 1896, when Oakes was 38 years of age, he heard of a newspaper in New York City which had suffered irreparable losses during the financial slump. And so, one day in the office of the publisher of the paper...
Gentlemen, you are now facing the new publisher of the New York Times.
Well,
I've just completed a new organization, the New York Times Company. I have great faith in the future of this newspaper. I know you have, or you wouldn't have stuck with it. Now, I'm going to give you an opportunity to come along with me. I want you, each one of you, to buy bonds and, as a bonus, receive parcels of stock. Well, gentlemen, what do you say? Well, have you made a decision?
Yes, I have, Mr. Oakes.
Yes, Mr. McKenzie.
We know what you've done with your paper down south. I'm going to stick by you. Take out bonds. Because we know the New York Times can't fail in your hands. What say, boys?
Thank you. I value your loyalty more than you'll ever know, because, well, I'm not the sort of man to give vent to emotional demonstrations.
All right.
We have a tremendous job before us, men, but I firmly believe that this great city of New York has room for a metropolitan newspaper conducted by men with ideals. A newspaper conducted as a decent, dignified journal.
We know that, Mr. Oakes, and we're with you. Every last man of us.
Our competitors are saying that I'm a fool. They're prophesying the career of the Times will be short. They're speculating as to whom and what I represent, and whose money is being sacrificed. Well, men, I owe no man a penny. I have no entangling alliances. I'm free. The editorial and advertising pages of the Times are going to be free. From this moment on, we're going to give our readers all the news that's fit to print.
The new policy of the Times created a furor among other New York papers. In 2 years, the circulation had more than doubled. In another year, at the turn of the century, the Times was completely out of debt, with a circulation of more than 76,000. All the news that's fit to print, that was the slogan. And every editor, reporter, feature writer, and copy reader, every typesetter, makeup man, and pressman, from Publisher Oaks to the lowliest errand boy, followed that precept. And each reader told his friends that here was a newspaper. As a consequence, by 1915, the Times boasted more than 300,000 readers. The World War was raging across Europe, and the United States was devouring every scrap of news. Newspapers and news-gathering agencies were vying with each other for scoops. On September 8th of that year, after the Times had been made ready for the presses, a sub-editor burst into the office of Publisher Oakes.
Mr. Oakes?
Mr. McKenzie? What is it, man? You look excited.
An AT-5 just came through in the wire.
What?
Here.
London bombed by German airships. Is that all there is?
That's all. I've checked with ATE and they don't know any more. They say that because of censorship, they won't be able to get any more until the mail reports arrive by ship.
Press room. Well, Matt, go down to the composing room and have this set up as you give it to the linotype man. Hello. Hold the presses. Mr. McKenzie will be right down with the story.
All right.
Now, Mac, do the best you can with what little you've got here. Then, when the presses are rolling again, find out when the first ship from England will arrive in New York Harbor. Bring that information to me as soon as you can.
What are you going to do? Send somebody out to meet the ship?
Better than that, we're going to Wiltshire and have the steward interview every passenger who was in London during that air raid tonight.
That's going to cost money.
Of course it'll cost money, but this is one of the biggest stories of the war so far. And, Mac, we're out to get a scoop. Just as we did with the story of the Titanic and with Peary at the North Pole. Don't forget, Mac, we give our readers all the news that's fit to print and we give it to them first. Get going.
Yes, Mr. McKenzie.
They don't know anything definite yet.
We'll check again.
Yes, sir.
All they said was that they're waiting for mail reports.
Expect them tomorrow morning.
Burn. Anything from the ship?
No, sir, nothing yet.
Uh-huh. Oh, hello, Mr.
Nope, nothing yet.
Either from AT or the ship.
Never mind, it'll come. That little list page we promised the chief steward was going to
take. Here it comes.
Yeah, that's it.
Here it is.
Hey, the scoop.
Wait a minute. Give Ross a chance.
I'm getting it.
Special to New York Times.
Yes, this is our story. All right, Mac, you handle it. I'm going up to write an editorial.
Okay, Mr. Oakes. Well, you scooped the other papers again.
Not I, Mac. We. We scoop the other papers. And we'll keep on doing it as long as the Times exists.
¶¶ Upon such sound reason and determined action was the success of the New York Times builded. And the powerful vision and activity of Adolph Simon Oakes was felt in other fields, too. For he had retained his ownership of the Chattanooga Daily Times and had purchased the Philadelphia Times and the Public Ledger. He also founded the Southern Associated Press, an organization for news gathering. Throughout his life, he lived and worked, keeping always in mind the rich tenets of his industrial philosophy.
In all its angles, there is in American journalism a demand and an urgent need for men of ability. Men possessing the cardinal virtues, prudence, justice, temperance, and fortitude. Faith, hope, and charity. Men who love their country and their fellow men. Men of courage and convictions. Men with vision and imagination. Men who are thorough and painstaking. Who take pride in their work and whose heart and soul are in it. Men who do not think they know it all, but can learn something from others. Above all, men with the practical equipment and the sincere and vigilant purpose to present the news honestly and without prejudice, and to interpret it with independence and fairness.
Having lived his full life of 77 years, he passed on. But his associates, his competitors, his readers, his advertisers, all who knew him or knew of him will ever think of him as one of the nation's truly great. Adolph Simon Oakes, Captain of Industry.